Studio 360.
If you're like me, as you listen to this, the hair on the back of your neck is standing up and you're starting to smile a little bit. It's the Twilight Zone, of course. Every week, Rod Serling, who created the show and wrote a lot of the episodes, presented new stories with new characters and entirely different actors. They were sci-fi or supernatural or fantastical stories in one way or another.
This is the dimension of imagination. It is an area which we call the Twilight Zone.
On this week's Studio 360, we're going to be spending the whole show looking at dystopian fictional worlds that people make to entertain or enlighten or alarm us.
There was a signal, like pictures, flashing pictures. They just appeared on every TV, every computer, anything with a screen.
So there's this thing on the TV.
The signal.
That's what's doing it. That's what's making them act like this.
Black Mirror is a British show set in the near future. It's sci-fi-ish. It's sometimes funny, or at least I find it funny. It's always dark. And like The Twilight Zone, every episode is a standalone story with its own characters and its own actors. It looks at the technologies we have now and extrapolating just a bit to see how these devices and software are transforming our relationships and our politics, our minds, really our lives. I am a huge fan, as you can probably tell, and cannot wait for the new season, which starts next month on Netflix. When the first season appeared on U.S. television last year, I talked with the show's creator, Charlie Brooker. Charlie, as well as being a television writer, is a critic and humorist in the U.K., and he, too, it turns out, had been fascinated by The Twilight Zone, which he'd watched in reruns as a kid.
I was always a fan of that kind of twist in the tale, spooky, creepy, what-if, speculative fiction. I read up a lot about Rod Serling and his life and what had interested him. McCarthyism, psychology, you know, the space race, the, you know, the Cold War. And so I thought, well, what's the current version of that? What concerns me now? And I think pretty much while I was thinking this, I was probably reading something off a device and, you know, which was reflecting my own sorry face back at me. And so the way that technology has marched in and upended everything over the last really relatively few years seemed like a good sort of starting point for what a, you know, a bunch of what-if stories,
right,
basically.
And speaking of looking at your device, that presumably is the source of the perfect title of this series, yeah?
Black Mirror, yes. So the title came about because partly I think I'd probably listened to an Arcade Fire song of the same name, and I think I thought, hang on, that's what they're talking about there is that's the Black Mirror. For me, that's the Black Mirror of a monitor or a smartphone screen or any kind of device. When it's switched off, it becomes this sort of unyielding black rectangle. Yeah.
The show is about technology, and there are some cool devices in it, but it's really about, as you say, the way they transform the rules of life and society.
Yeah.
In the first episode, which I want to play a bit from, somebody, apparently a terrorist of some kind, kidnaps a princess and in a ransom video says she'll be killed unless the prime minister goes on live national TV that afternoon and has sex with a pig.
Mm.
Of course, the video ends up on YouTube and the clock ticks down. And this clip from that episode is where the prime minister is talking at home with his wife.
I don't want you worrying.
You never patronized me. Don't start now.
Whoever this is insane.
And has a princess.
Who'll get through this?
Not just any princess. The princess. Princess bloody Facebook bloody eco-conscious national sweetheart.
I won't have to do anything.
Everyone's laughing at us.
You don't know that.
I know people. We love humiliation. We can't not laugh.
Nothing is going to happen.
It's already happening in their heads. In their heads, that's what you're doing. What my husband is doing.
That is the national anthem, the very first episode of Black Mirror. The premise is right at the edge of plausibility, and at first seems like a shocking, funny sketch comedy premise, but then you play it very seriously and realistically and not as farce, and it becomes kind of heart-wrenching. That was the intent?
That was definitely the intention. I mean, it was, and, you know, it actually came about as a comic idea I'd had when I was writing a newspaper column. Huh. And when I started initially sitting down writing the script, the model I had in mind was 24, the series 24, and I was sort of writing almost a parody of 24. And then as it went on, it became apparent that actually what's interesting here is to take this joke premise and actually make the man at the centre of it and his wife real people who are going to be utterly humiliated and devastated by events. And there's a lack of control going on in this day and age. It's not quite clear who is in command.
Because I think, of YouTube at any point, and social media and all the rest.
You know, within the show, you've got the traditional media are powerless to stop this.
Right.
You know, the government is powerless to stop this message going viral. The media are powerless to sort of, they're playing catch up. The public don't even really want what they're then given, basically, at the end. You know, it's harrowing and it's repellent.
In several of the episodes, and maybe all of the episodes, intimacy and relationships and husbands and wives are central, and how technology is reshaping them. There's one episode in which people can record everything they see and then review it later, which isn't very good for marriage, it turns out. Is the technology our villain here, or is it us villainizing ourselves?
I don't think technology is the villain. I mean, this isn't, despite maybe appearances, I don't think it's an anti-tech show, really, because I'm quite, you know, I'm quite...
No, you're clearly ambivalent.
It's more that, I mean, in that particular episode, it's more that guy is clearly sort of jealous and possessive and troubled anyway, you know, and he is just enabled by the technology, I guess. The technology enables him to indulge his weaker side, really, within that story. So I don't think, within the stories, it's partly because it's more interesting to me to, because they're human stories, and so if you keep them fairly intimate and about kind of, you know, everyday lives and human interests, romance and, you know, or sort
infidelity,
of career pressures. Or
comes up again and again.
All of that kind of, it does come up quite a bit, actually, that, doesn't it? Yeah. But that is more immediately accessible than a bunch of, you know, aliens in robes discussing trade agreements in Vector 5.
Yeah.
You know, so in a way, that's, it's kind of weak people using powerful tools.
Right.
It's quite often what we depict.
And the technology, that this futuristic technology, is really well imagined, but also...
Oh, I love it, yeah.
Really beautifully mocked up. Using, of course, cool technologies.
I mean, and sometimes we really fetishize it ourselves. I mean, just on the show. Like, so in there's an episode called Be Right Back where with Hayley Atwell and Donald Gleason, and Hayley plays a woman whose boyfriend dies and is replaced by a sort of AI equivalent that's drawn from his tweets and Facebook updates and what have you. But within that episode, she's an illustrator and she's depicted using this...
Yep.
Kind of piece of drawing apparatus that really our FX guys, who are very, very, you know, we've got this FX team who are brilliant, and they were putting together, I think, their dream device. And I think when sort of illustrators and graphic designers watch that episode, they all
go, "I want it.
Where did she get that?" I mean, this is always the watchword with the show. We've always had I get very involved in all the conversations about the design of stuff, because I find that knocks me out of the moment. If I'm watching a movie and someone receives an email and the email is depicted on their screen as a giant spinning envelope because that's more visually interesting, I'm immediately thinking that's not real. So hopefully we aim for the tech as depicted within Black Mirror is hopefully usable, but it's seductive.
Yep.
It should look like you want it. It should look like it helps you and you would want that in your life.
Black Mirror is broadly political, I guess, in its critiques of the world, and a couple are explicitly about politics. But you've said that beyond being, quote, broadly leftish, you don't get worked up about problems and political controversies very much. And I empathize with that. Does that mean we're part of the problem?
I mean, maybe. I mean, maybe. Maybe we're. There are many who would say yes. I mean, I sort of think it's really. I think that comes about because I don't think I have the moral certainty that a lot of people seem to express when they get involved in a political argument.
Uh-huh.
A lot of people are extremely, from my perspective, to be extremely secure in their position and all their views and what they think. And then when it becomes a sort of my team versus your team kind of mindset, I find it hard to relate to.
Right.
Because I think I am more racked by self-doubt, which is possibly a weakness within me. But I think that's why I find it hard to necessarily 100% subscribe to one concrete point of view all the time. I don't know. Everything feels like it feels like we're in an age where everything is getting a little more polarized, and all debates that happen are a little more. We're still figuring out how to use social media and stuff like that. It's kind of like the whole of social media strikes me as being like a conversation in a pub at closing time when everyone's a bit rowdy and things could kick off at any time. If you say the wrong thing, you know, that like it could devolve into screaming at any moment. And I think we will just kind of get used to dealing with that as a species, because at the moment it's kind of like a new vehicle we're learning to drive and we're smacking it into the walls left and right.
Your most recent episode, the seventh, is called White Christmas, and it stars John Hamm as a guy who, among other things, helps single guys navigate dating by watching them through their eyes and talking into their ears. Here's a clip from that episode.
Amy,
hi.
Get her to introduce you to the dark-haired girl.
So, all of your friends this suspicious?
Nice.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
This is Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
Now focus on Amy, and we'll do that funny material that we worked on.
Anyway, this guy gets off the horse, and he's got a backpack, right?
The tactic, generally, was to deliberately freeze out the one you were actually interested in. For one thing, you wouldn't seem needy, but also they would most times sort of lean in, naturally. People want to be noticed. They don't like to be shut out. It makes them feel invisible. But this girl seemed content with being ignored.
Maybe she could smell a loser.
No. No. She was an outsider. An attractive outsider. There's nothing more tantalizing than that.
Within that episode, we do ride through lots of conceits that we've sort of slightly introduced in previous episodes. And there's little Easter eggs for fans of the earlier eps. We've sort of got little there's a reference to every single episode buried away
really?
In there somewhere. Oh, yeah, you just have to look very closely. But it's funny because I immediately saw people speculating over whether this means that Black Mirror takes part in one shared universe. Well, of course it does, because we're all in one shared universe.
Yes.
So, yes.
you are a critic and a funny, sometimes vicious critic. As you're making things, as you're writing and producing this show, do you have to turn off or pay attention to that inner critic?
I don't think you ever can. I mean, I think that every writer I know has an inner critic who's constantly sitting there going, this is rubbish. What you just typed is rubbish, and the next thing you type is going to be more rubbish. Yeah. See, told you, rubbish. and really, the only way I've ever found to deal with it is to have a deadline set for you and have things get to such a crisis that the voice that's screaming, this is going to be late, you've got to type it, is drowning out the voice that's saying, this is rubbish.
Uh-huh.
That's literally the best tactic I've ever come up
with. Wise words.
To basically
get
to a crisis point. And I think that's often why things I write tend to seem quite feverish, paranoid, or angry, is because
those are
the conditions under. The rest of the time, I'm just eating peanuts, you know, and walking around the house sort of playing video games. I play a lot of video games in my downtime. I'll sort of say, right, if you write two more scenes and then you can play Far Cry. You know, it's sort of that's my work ethic. It's pathetic, really, isn't it?
It works for you, and it has been a pleasure speaking with you, Charlie.
A pleasure to speak to you, too.
The other day, Charlie Brooker was at the Toronto International Film Festival screening two new episodes of the new season of Black Mirror. And he told the Daily Beast there that he's freaked out a little how real life seems to be catching up with his dystopian fiction. As he said, and you're going to hear me bleeped, I find it f-ing terrifying because I think Trump's going to win. The new season of Black Mirror premieres on October 21st on Netflix.